You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. As always, I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, the new Himalaya podcast app, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Today's show is me and Jeff Siegel, the proprietor of Early Bird Rights, the writer from Peachtree Hoops, Forbes, a bunch of other places, talking about Colin Sexton, talking about his playmaking and what he's been as a rookie to date. I think you'll learn a lot about Colin, and I think you'll kind of go into the rest of the season looking at him, not just for the progress he's made as a scorer, but also what he is as someone working as a point guard in a league where ball movement and passing and motion offenses are really dictating the play. And isolation is not necessarily the in vogue thing right now, but that is sort of what Colin is good at. The Cavs do play the Spurs tonight in San Antonio, kicking off a road trip that will take them to San Antonio, Utah, Los Angeles, and Golden State, and then they come home, play Portland and Charlotte to finish the season. But this is the start of that road trip where they go San Antonio and then to LA and play in Sacramento and Golden State before playing in Phoenix as well and coming back to Cleveland to finish the season. So an interesting stretch for the Cavs. They're currently still in that number three spot in terms of the draft lottery, but we'll see how that goes between them, the Bulls, the Knicks, and the Suns, but really mostly the Suns and the Bulls over these next few weeks. That Monday game against Phoenix really could peg them into one spot or the other. But here's my show with me and Jeff, and talk to you tomorrow after the Cavs play the Spurs. Thanks as always for your support and for listening. Joining me now is Jeff Siegel, the proprietor of Early Bird Rights, a writer for Peachtree Hoops. Jeff, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Your official podcast response lives on, and I'm very here for this. So today we're going to talk about, as you people may have seen on Twitter this week, so today we're going to talk about Colin Sexton and Colin Sexton's assist numbers in particular. I think Colin has improved as a scorer. I think he's more comfortable in the NBA game now. But if you're looking at something that is maybe concerning about his game, it's that as a creator for others, and it's something that I think you can, we've seen reporting, and I think you can see body language where it seems to frustrate players a bit. And you see when you watch the film, you see him miss some reads and stuff, is that he's not, now at least, and I don't know how much he will get better at this, he's just not a lead creating guard at this moment. He's currently averaging only 2.8 assists per game. That is not a lot. If you look at his assist percentage, it has been hovering around the 15% mark for most of this year, meaning he is assisting on 15% of the team's buckets when he's on the floor. If you look at his overall, the way he's playing, it's very score first. It's very downhill, get to the rim or take a shot. It's very close-minded. Jeff, when you watch Sexton and when you look at his numbers, is this, I mean, I don't know how much you would like project when he's coming into the league, but what does that say about what he is as a player that he's not really assisting much, although he is starting at the point guard spot?
I mean, I think it would say that he's more of a scorer than an assist, you know, a creator for others. I think there are other guys who maybe have had bad creation numbers to start off their career and have eventually, you know, sort of learned their place in the league and learned how to pass later on in their career. It's not something that you can just, a lot of rookie point guards don't walk in as great passers. I know it's something that, you know, a lot of we've seen a couple of guys at the top of the draft do that this year. We've seen a few people over the years do that, but it's not necessarily something that you can just expect a rookie point guard to be able to run an NBA offense at a high level immediately. That's not an easy thing to do. So that's why rookie point guards for the most part are not positive impact players for your team. And we've seen that for the most part with Sexton this year. Obviously the shooting has gotten a lot better recently, and he's been playing, you know, better as a result. He's a better scorer than he was in November, December. But the passing hasn't really come along yet, and whether it comes along next year or the year after, I mean, it takes a while for point guards to really get it, especially a point guard like Sexton, who was never a preternatural passer in at the college level. And his main offensive draw was the fact that he could put the ball in the bucket, not find his teammates. And I think that's the, you know, we're seeing that sort of manifest itself at the NBA level as a rookie point guard already behind the curve, just because he doesn't have the experience on top of being a score first, having a score first mentality. You know, it's just, it's adding up to this 15% is this percentage.
For me, in terms of how I've watched him this season, I would say that the thing that it's made a pop on my radar more lately is that with Colin Sexton getting Kevin Love back over the last bit of the season, before that I could sort of understand of why he maybe wasn't getting a ton of assists or anything like that, right? Because the Cavs offense was very bad. He didn't have a ton of great avenues. The Cavs offense was sort of just getting points, but kind of forcing it however they could. And even when he was playing better, it was because he was scoring and making things happen. With Love back, you would hope that would just create easy opportunities for him. I don't think the Cavs have actually leaned on that quite enough in terms of, you know, running some pick and pops, running some pick and rolls, running actions where Sexton can make easy reads and just sort of get the repetitions of that down a little bit. I would like to see them force that a little bit to him. But at the same time, I've also seen a guy who I think even with better options and slightly better spacing and things, he's not necessarily I was looking once he like makes a decision to get downhill, and this is maybe normal for a rookie guard who's trying to find his way in the league, he's not looking for others. Sometimes he just barrels in and goes for his shot or tries to get in the position where he can shoot. He misses lobs sometimes, he misses some of the basic reads sometimes where there's a guy open, or that extra pass that, you know, separates some of these elite creators from guys that are just fine, where they make that extra read because they just inherently know, okay, if I give up this shot, even if I have an open shot here, if I swing it left to player X, which is, you know, could be Kevin Love, Jetty Osmond, whoever, that's a better shot for this team. That's just the thing he hasn't developed yet, or maybe just doesn't have. And that's for me, in terms of thinking about how, you know, the current with the way that basketball is played right now, the way that I think he would best fit in the league, that's kind of concerning to me. I don't want to, like, dower on how much better he's gotten as a shooter, as a scorer. He's developed this nice little floater. It's remarkable that he's gone from dribbling into a mid-range shot from a wide-open corner three to burying threes and taking them pretty confidently right now. But the passing stuff is just a little weird, and it's the one rub on him. Aside from the defense, which all rookies are bad at defense, this is, like, the thing that I would say is, like, the biggest question mark for me about him right now.
Yeah, and the defense you mentioned is important because that was part of his reputation coming out of college. I think people who watched him very closely and were very sort of in tune with his defensive proficiencies and deficiencies were not as high on him because, you know, he was a little bit one of those energy guys who would gamble a little bit, and so it looked good. It looked like he played with energy, but really it wasn't quite as strong as it needed to be. But, you know, just getting back to the passing, I think I certainly wouldn't even have my hand anywhere near the panic button. As a rookie, it's fine that he's not very good at these things. Most rookies are not. This is the being able to read the game and make the right decision between shoot and pass is probably the hardest decision that any point guard or any player has to make. On a possession by possession basis, his pick and roll numbers are not very good in terms of not just because his results aren't very good, but just the usage isn't particularly weighted in the right way. He shoots a lot more out of pick and roll than you would like. He passes a lot less than you would like. I think it's just that's another sort of manifestation of his not just bad passing, but unwillingness, not even necessarily unwillingness, but he's just not seeing it. It's not that he's selfish. He just doesn't quite have that vision yet. And I wouldn't, you know, whether that is because he's selfish and he sees things, but he chooses not to make those passes because he believes in himself as a scorer. That would be a bigger concern, but I'm not willing to go there yet and say, I'm not willing to, you know, pencil him in as more of a selfish point guard, as more of a shoot first point guard, because we need to see more of it by the halfway through year three. If he's still like this, then yeah, we have to have a conversation about whether this guy should have the ball in his hands on a possession by possession basis and whether he, you know, should be the team's point guard going forward. But if he, you know, I would not expect that. I would expect that they will work on these things with him. They will get him, you know, in a situation where he has more experience. I mean, he's still just, you know, a few months into his career, and I think it's, I'm not nearly as worried about it long term as it seems some people might be.
I would agree with that, because I would also say that he does not benefit from the system the Cavs runs, nor the personnel the Cavs have, right? Like, he plays a lot with Jordan Clarkson. Like, and when you're playing with Jordan Clarkson, basically you're just kind of playing like the... If, like, LeBron and Kyrie were the Cadillac of, like, isolation duos, or, like, the Tesla, Sexton and Clarkson would be, like, a beat-up Chevy Pinto version of that. Like, and maybe that's, like, harsh, but, like, it's just not the same thing. But that's just sort of how they played. And if you look at the guys he's played with the most, Jordan Clarkson's the guy he spent the third most time on the court with. You hear Jetty is first by a wide margin, then Larry Nance, and then Jordan Clarkson. So, like, that is telling about sort of how he's been used. And Larry Drew's system, partially because of the roster, partially because of other things, I don't think really is, like, encouraging for Sexton to do some of this stuff or inherently look to pass. I don't know how much of that is personnel or scheme or what combination of it is. I don't have, like, good percentages on that. But I also do think, like, he might look different if he was playing in, like, a Mike Malone-type system where the ball's swinging a lot, that, you know, they rely on Love's passing more than they do right now where Nance is passing. If there was something like that where ball movement and kind of the built-in idea of creation for others was part of the team's identity, he might look a little bit different. I don't know how much that changes it, but I definitely feel like that has to factor into how we view him in context here.
Yeah, and I wouldn't... And that's going to be hard to judge until they either have a new system under a new coach or Larry Drew has a full summer to implement what he wants to implement with Sexton. You know, Sexton's career didn't exactly get off to the best start for a rookie point guard to have a full summer. And then, it didn't work quite as well as you would like to for him in terms of getting to know the coach's system and all that. So, you know, he'll have another summer to get in the gym with Larry Drew or whomever is the coach moving forward. Then, you know, have another full season under that system with a lot of the same guys around him, because, you know, the Cavs are relatively capped out in terms of the roster that they're going to have moving forward. So, you know, we're going to get a lot. He's going to have a lot of consistency over the next 12 months. We can sort of put a bookmark in this, come back to it in, you know, February, March of next year, and really have a much better idea of where, you know, what kind of growth he's shown as a passer, what kind of growth he's shown across the board, and see what we can use, you know, how we can use that to project him going forward. If things don't improve, then we, you know, at that point we can probably have, you know, at least start the conversation of, you know, is this guy the point guard going forward, or is he more of a combo guard, somebody who can defend point guards but needs another lead ball handler out there with him? You know, especially if the shooting is real, then you can pair him with a more traditional pass first point guard, and then he can sort of space the floor a little bit more, plus he can do a little bit of attacking himself. So, you know, that the fact that the 3-point shot has come along as well as it has makes him much more versatile and makes it much easier to build around him, because you can now put him off the ball and teams have to respect him because he can make that shot. So there are, you know, there are certainly massive positives to take away from his rookie year. There weren't these same positives, you know, 3 months ago when he was not very good. And, you know, so it's not necessarily time, you know, it's the same thing that I've been saying, I guess, for the last few minutes. It's not time to hit the panic button. We're going to see what he does over the summer and into next year, and we'll sort of, you know, be able to project him better moving forward at that point.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with more from Jeff Siegel about Colin Sexton. And remember, you can get the show every day by subscribing to Locked On Cavs on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Cavs. Jeff and I will be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Wyze, the indoor camera that does it all. Wyze is packed with premium features that allow you to see everything from anywhere for only $20. It has 1080p full HD, images so clear you won't miss a thing, night vision, and two-way audio. Wyze's mission is to bring amazing smart home products and make them accessible to everyone. Check your home from anywhere with Wyze's app live stream. Connect with life as it unfolds in sharp focus. If you go away for a couple hours and you have to run some errands, you can do things like making sure your food's sitting around the stove for a couple hours, keeps going, and isn't boiling over while you're away. You can watch your plants grow through a time lapse. Or if you have a pet and you want to make sure your dog is doing okay and you have to leave for a couple hours, you can check in on it with Wyze. And if you want more, they have that too. For just $10 more, Wyze's Can Pan gives you 360-degree coverage in under 3 seconds. Life moves fast, so your camera should too. You can patrol your room with Pan Scan and set the camera's patrol route up to 4 custom waypoints. This works with Alexa, and it has free rolling 14-day cloud storage. So go to wyze.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. Go check out Wyze today at wyze.com. That is wyze.com/locked. Are back. Okay, Jeff, let's look in the context of other rookies and other players. Now, I think I'm going to let you just kind of take the floor here with Trae Young, because you just saw him in person a bunch. Trae Young is averaging more assists per game at 7.9 than Colin Sexton's career high, which is 7 in a game. Trae Young has obviously came in like Trevor McNaughty, who you hear on this podcast, you read his draft writing at the Step Back and Feel the Sword. His thing with Trae coming into the league was that his passing might be his best skill, or is his best skill. I think that's proven very true. But when you watch Trae play, and just aside from the numbers, when you see him just make reads, what is it that stands out when he's racking up assists? Like, what is it about things that he sees, or what is it? What skill does he have that allows him to be this kind of distributor as a rookie?
Well, any skill that you could possibly imagine for a passer, other than the fact that he's not very tall, he's got. He has everything that you could ever. If you built a passing point guard in a lab, other than if he was 6'4", there's really not a whole lot else that Trae doesn't have. He can pass with both hands. He can pass to any part of the court with both hands. He throws these, he's right-handed, but he throws these lefty bullets that both somehow get to where they need to go accurately and confuse opposing defenses, because they expect him to hit the corner and he hits the roll man, or they expect him to hit the roll man and he hits the corner. Of the guys that we sort of would think about as great sort of rookie passers all time, he's got to be on that short list of the best rookies ever to come in and be, you know, a great passer. And so I think it's a sort of a disservice to Sexton to even compare the two of them, because I think Trae Young is one of the all-time great rookie passers. And of course, Sexton is not even an above average rookie passer probably at this point. Maybe he's slightly below average for what you would expect a rookie to be, because rookies in general are not particularly good at reading the game like that. But Trae doesn't suffer from any of those sort of normal rookie tropes from a passing perspective. He's got every skill you can possibly imagine. He can make every pass. He's already very proficient at drawing a double team out of pick and roll and dumping it to the roll man or to a shooter on the wing or really anywhere. And he can drive and dump. He can drive and kick. He can make every pass, every kind of hook pass, right hand, left hand, you know, these one-handed cross-court passes that find the mark. He's an overwhelmingly great passer, and so the comparison there is obviously going to be a little bit tough for Sexton.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't mean to say, like, compare them. I'm just saying, like, he, in terms of other rookie point guards, I think it's clear that he is just very different. And I don't think that's, like, inherently a bad thing to, like, not be that. I think I just want to say, like there is a difference in what Trey is and what Colin is, and it means, like, the Atlanta can build one way, the Cavs probably have to build another. And they have different ways to develop. Like, Trey probably, like, defensively, like, has less of a potential than Colin does because Colin's just a little bit bigger. Trey's very small. But then you watch, when I watch Trey play, like, I watch him, even when, like, the game slows down a little bit and it gets half court, he makes smart decisions. When I was at Cavs Celtics on Tuesday, I watched Colin sort of struggle, and this is with, like, Marcus Smart on him to some extent, so that contributes to this. But he, like, didn't, when the game really slowed down and was played at this pace in the half court where he needed to, like, initiate the offense and feed a guy in the wing, he struggled with, he had two passes in the first half where he just couldn't quite get it in the right spot. And when the game loosened up and flowed, like, he thrived and he was much better. But he only had, like, one assist in this game as well. So it's, like, his game certainly evolved in a certain way. Jeff, when you think about roster building and you think about just Trey in particular, and then we'll get back to Colin, what is him and, like, the what they're doing, how, like, inherent is, like, this team's identity going forward tied into what Trey is?
I mean, I think we're gonna get a lot more of that out of this upcoming draft, depending on, you know, where they end up and where they go. I would think that, you know, where we are right now in March, that they feel like Trey is the point guard of the future, and that they will figure out how to deal with his defensive shortcomings, and there are an immense amount of them. Every good thing I just said about his passing, just take the opposite word and apply it to his defense, and it still holds. He is probably the worst defensive player in the league, which is relatively normal for rookies, but he's also tiny and gets caught up on screens even though he's super small. Like, he's not slithery as a defender at all. He gets lost off the ball. Like, he's really, really bad, and teams are going to go after him his entire career, and he's going to have to either figure that out, or they're going to have to scheme around it or whatever. But he is going to, I would imagine that he has already sort of elevated himself into a strong conversation for their point guard for the next however many years that he's on the team. So until he either decides to leave an unrestricted free agency or demands a trade or whatever, I think they're going to move forward with the assumption that he's going to be their point guard of the future. I don't think that conclusion has been reached by the Cavaliers about Colin Sexton. He still has to prove that he can be that lead ball handler. The fact that, you know, the development as a passer this summer and into next year and into the summer after that is going to be very important for them to sort of evaluate whether he can be that guy. But Trey has already sort of shown that he is that guy. He is the kind of passer, and he's got that floater game that Sexton has sort of developed over the last couple of months. Trey's floater has really gotten a lot better over the last couple of months as well. His three-point shot, of course, has, you know, taken has upgraded in a massive way over where he was in November, where he was like a 20% three-point shooter through 6 weeks of the season, and all of a sudden now he's, you know, climbing into a respectable range after that disastrous start. So he's got everything that they would want out of their sort of offensive primary creator, and, you know, the what they put around him in terms of shooting and pick and roll threats, that's going to be how they sort of develop their team, especially offensively. They're going to develop that around Trey. They're going to target guys who fit around him and fit into, you know, Lloyd Pierce's system as a guy who emphasizes the three-point shot to a very strong degree. I think they're going to make sure that everybody who's on the court can do those sort of things. And so you know, I think they're in a different spot with Young than Cleveland is with Sexton, even though they were both taken in, you know, the top handful of picks of the last draft. Young has shown that he can be that primary offensive engine. They're going to have to scheme around him defensively for sure, but it's not, that's something that they'll take the bad with the good in that particular circumstance.
So let's go to Sexton here. So let's say he does not become, let's say, an elite creator. And I think that would be a stretch, like where he maybe settles in like a higher than 15% and like doesn't have games where he, you know, isn't assisting like more than once or twice in a game for long stretches. And like, he just settles in as like, not, you know, a Trae Young or like elite creator for others, but like a decent guy at setting up others. It's a skill he gets better at, which I think is a reasonable thing to ask of him. I think that's baseline number one. But let's say he does also get good at, you know, shooting off ball and really thrives as a scorer. What do you think that means for building a team? Like, if he's your one in that regard, I mean, I sort of think that probably makes it a little bit more challenging to find the right fits. It can probably get a little bit complicated. There are certainly ways to do it. The Cavs have passing bigs that are a bit older than Sexton and Love and Nance that could be part of this. But what do you think that would mean for a team, for this Cavs organization, as they like look to build these next couple years and really have a very important draft coming up with their first pick, which could be Ja Morant or, you know, RJ Barrett, and then a pick later in the first round via Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he's already a relatively strong off-ball threat has been a big boon to his.
And not to interrupt you, this is just something he did not do at Alabama. This is like something he completely had to develop from scratch, basically.
Yeah, and he's been great at doing that. I mean, he's in the 64th percentile in spot-up possessions, which include, you know, spot-up catch and drive past a closeout or just, you know, the initial shot. He's in the 92nd percentile in catch-and-shoot efficiency. He's in the 93rd percentile in catch-and-shoot guarded efficiency in terms of taking that catch-and-shoot jumper even though there's a guy in his face. Like, he's a better shooter right now than I thought he would ever be in his entire career. And he's already got that sort of shot down. And maybe this is a little bit of small sample size theater. Maybe he's gotten a little bit lucky. Maybe, you know, things are going his way in a much bigger way than we can expect going forward. But the shot looks at least to be somewhat real. Maybe it's not 43% real. Maybe it's 38% real. But that's really good. I mean, that's a solid, that can be a solid sort of 3-and-D point guard in that way, and that he's not necessarily the guy who has the ball in his hands. If he's not a passer, then he can't be your primary creator for the most part. If you're trying to be, you know, a strong contender for a championship or deep, you know, a deep playoff run, he can't be that guy if he's not a passer. So, you know, unless he's going to be just an overwhelmingly great scorer, which, you know, at this point we can't totally project that yet. But assuming he takes relatively, you know, relatively normal steps forward, but doesn't ever get the passing gene integrated into his game, then he can be a 3-and-D point guard, the sort of player that they thought they were getting last year in George Hill, who would have at his peak fit really well next to LeBron James, who is the team's primary creator despite not playing the point guard spot. George Hill is sort of a good comparison for what Sexton could be moving forward into the future if he is a relatively strong shooter but doesn't quite get the rest of the point guard stuff in terms of passing and creating for his teammates and leading the team offensively. Then it seems like it's something that you just need to find. It seems so easy when I say it like that. You just need to find a big playmaking wing who can sort of take the primary point guard's duties away from him offensively but doesn't necessarily need to be, or really can't be, a point guard sized player because he has to guard somebody who's not a point guard, because that's Sexton's spot in terms of the defensive shape that the Cleveland Cavaliers are going to play. So he was going to have to, that player is going to have to be a combo guard, a wing, even a point forward, a LeBron James type player, Ben Simmons, guys like that. Luka Doncic, of course, would fall into that category. The guys who are already in the league who can do those sorts of things. Brandon Ingram maybe could, you know, as a sort of guy who's not necessarily on the market, because he's really only on the market for Anthony Davis, but somebody who's out there who's not necessarily one of the most, you know, one of the elite guys, he can sort of play that role. Whether there's somebody in this draft coming up that can play that role is sort of up for debate. Some people are higher on certain creators than others. You know, the fit with Ja Morant is not great. Because of the defensive issues there, two sort of smaller point guard sized guys, that's going to be a very difficult defensive duo to, you know, to build a decent defense around, just because of the lack of perimeter defensive skill in those two guys, the lack of size, the lack of skill as well. I mean, Ja is not a great defender, and Sexton we thought might be decent, but has not been particularly good on that end. So, you know, team building wise, I think it's going to take a bigger wing, a tall creator, anybody who can defend the 2 through 5 spots and can be a team's primary offensive option. That's what you're looking for. Those kinds of guys are harder to find, but are getting easier as we go forward, as guys are becoming more well-rounded in their game, and as wings are being taught not just to do the wing stuff, but to be able to handle the ball a little bit more.
I think you're dead on with that. I think the George Hill comparison is really interesting, because what the players that come up for him as comparisons for rookie year in terms of guards, like the guys that had similar assist percentages are like Amon Shumpert and Marcus Smart, and he's like the inverse of those guys basically. And if he's like a modified version of George Hill, he's much more explosive. Like, he's much more athletic, but I just think the speed difference for him is just could be a big game changer for him as well. It's something that makes him really interesting. The draft then becomes just this really important thing, because I just, based on the fit of Sexton alone, and you and I have talked about this in Slack when we've been trading messages, that like maybe you would just trade, like in a vacuum, like Morant is like, I think, certainly the better prospect. But like, you're probably not going to get like adequate value back on like flipping Sexton, and like that's a big bet on Morant, etc. I almost just think like if you're at 2 and you get to pick between those guys, I think I would just go Barrett. And if you slide a little bit, you're looking at DeAndre Hunter, you're looking at Coby White is flying up draft boards. He, I think, would be a really good fit as an off-ball guard next to Sexton, especially in this NBA. If you're going to go with 2 guards in your backcourt, White's a much better fit. And you go back in the lottery, like, there's going to be a bunch of wings there, and you know their fits are going to be interesting. Some of them will be developing, but if you get someone like Matisse Thybulle from Washington, like, maybe that guy makes sense, because he can defend and kind of can help you hide Sexton a bit more or something like that. And I do think Jetty Osman here factors in this too, because he's a good secondary creator. I would not ever trust him, like, unless he just blossoms in a way we're not expecting, to be a lead creator in any way. But he's got a knack for finding interesting lanes. He's a good secondary passer. He makes extra passes really well. Like, you could supplement all of that and, like, hope that RJ Barrett, let's say, like, does blossom into something spectacular, and Kevin Love can help and Larry Nance can help and stuff, and you could build a more flowy system that isn't based on just one guy. Now, if you get Zion, like, that's a whole other conversation. You take Zion and just figure the rest out later. But if you go with, like, Barrett, you can build something, I think, that can be more built on team basketball and ball movement and stuff, where Sexton can maybe use his skills in a way where he gets to pick his spot and isn't just like driving against defenses, because that's just all he really can do right now.
I mean, I think from where we stand right now, if they get the number 2 pick in the draft, every leak that comes out of the Cleveland front office has to be, we love Ja Morant and we think we can make it work with Colin Sexton. And then the day of, you make that, you trade back for RJ Barrett or Jarrett Culver or whoever basically you're looking at. Phoenix, you're looking at teams that are would use Ja Morant and would really want him at their point guard spot. You look to those teams to trade with, and you try to work a deal out like that, because Morant and Sexton probably doesn't work together, and you would not necessarily want to trade. You wouldn't want to take Morant and then try to trade Sexton, because you're negotiating from a very weak position in that case, because those two guys probably can't work together. I mean, you could try it, but the offense would really have to be great, and you can see how the offense could be great if Ja is everything that he could be in terms of a lead creator who can score and pass and do all of the sort of Russell Westbrook type things. And then Sexton's three-point shot is real. Plus, he's got a little bit of his own off-the-bounce, you know, scoring ability for himself. Like, you could see those guys being a very strong offensive duo, but the defense would just be, you know, it would just be untenable to a point that would probably necessitate one of them to be moved down the line. That doesn't necessarily mean you would have to do it this summer if they got Ja, but it's something that would always be talked about and always be in the back of everybody's mind. And once they decided to do one or the other, it would be difficult for them to get value for either one of those guys, even if it's down the line a few years. So, you know, I think it's something where if they do end up at number two, then trading back is the most important thing. I think for Atlanta, it's the same thing. They've got Trae Young, and that combination definitely doesn't work because neither one of those guys are going to be good defensive players probably. And so, you know, it's really, and they already have the sort of primary lead creator that they need offensively. So, you know, pairing Trae Young and Ja Morant is not particularly a good idea. So, you know, I think either one of those teams, if they were the ones who ended up at number two, and it's clear that Ja is the number two guy, they're going to be looking to trade back pretty much immediately.
Jeff, we're getting out of here. Give me just one non-Sexton, non-Hawks. Just give me like an NBA take you have right now that you feel very strongly about.
That's an interesting question. I have
one if you don't have one right away.
I don't have anything super spicy right away, but I'm not necessarily someone you would come to for spicy.
No, neither of us are like super spicy, I would say. But my general thing right now is I just really want the Magic to make the playoffs. Like, that's all I really want in life.
That'd be fun. Just to see what they could do, see Steve Clifford back in the playoffs. I'm partial to Kemba Walker and the Hornets. I hope they get in and can make some noise. I hope they get a good matchup against somebody who, you know, maybe they can give a series to. I think that would be for the first round of the playoffs. If they got matched up with, say, the Milwaukee Bucks, and they were able to, you know, Kemba's pulling up from mid-range and pulling up from the three-point line, and, you know, James Borrego is a smart coach who can scheme around what Milwaukee likes to do in some terms of dropping their big defensively. I think that would be a lot of fun now that you've got me sort of thinking about the bottom of the East. I think Charlotte against Milwaukee might give them a few more issues than Milwaukee really wants in the first round.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But the playoffs are coming soon. The Cavs will, of course, not be in them, but we'll be following them anyway. I've actually started mapping out postseason coverage after the sort in on the pod, and it's going to be fun, I think, because there's a lot of stuff that's going to be decided. I think the coach is going to set I've said this a bunch, but I do think the coaching hire is going to set everything up for the Cavs this summer. That's the big thing. And then the draft lottery, but the coaching hire is really going to tell us a lot. But you can find Jeff on Twitter at JG Siegel. Read his writing at Peachtree Hoops and a bunch of other places. And be sure to check out Early Bird Rights, where I and I think a ton of other people go to get their cap sheets, because Jeff already did it for us, and he does a great job at it. But Jeff, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Jeff for stopping by. Again, back tomorrow morning, recap of Cavs Spurs tonight. Tip 8:30 tip from San Antonio. Spurs, obviously a playoff team, playing very, very good basketball right now, as always. I'm very curious to see what Greg Popovich will have designed up to maybe make Colin Sexton get pushed in a certain way. It's going to be a fascinating game. Again, 8:30 tip tomorrow morning, first thing at Locked On Cavs, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, the new Himalaya podcast app, wherever you get your shows, subscribe, rate, review, and thanks as always for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.